You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, I feel like we're talking about the same thing all the time, Ron, and it is, again, the border. The border is in the news every day, and now President Trump is talking about closing the border down because we, again, have unprecedented numbers coming over the border. They're talking about something like 100,000 people being arrested this month in border crossings. So think about how many are not getting arrested.
Well, there's even more not getting arrested. And for anybody to think that there is not an extremely serious crisis at the border, they're just nuts. Just in the state of Arizona, during the last 2 months, the United States Border Patrol has released 18,000 illegal aliens, and they're all in the wind. And as we know, and we've talked about this several times, 98% of these people never show up to court again. So they're being distributed throughout the United States. But also, the United States Border Patrol is placing these illegal aliens, families and children that they have released from 20 days of detention who have not been processed, and they are releasing them all over the United States. So just picture that. You know, picture some towns that are 100,000 people in population, and that represents the total amount of people that are being interdicted, so far. I mean,
in a month.
Right. Oh. That's what I mean. Because we're coming up to the end of our month. Right. So just in this last month.
Right. And, you know, the thing that is, again, it's a hypocrisy issue for me. We have all of our esteemed politicians talking about the problems on the border. So one side says there's an emergency on the border, which I agree with. And the other side says, nothing to see here. There's no emergency. This is the same business as usual. And in fact, it is not the same business as usual. The numbers are greatly rising. And these people who we have put in office to take care of these problems have kicked this ball down the road or can down the road for years and years and years. And here we are today where they still did nothing. The Republicans, when they had the House and the Senate, did nothing.
I'm angry at everybody. I'm sorry, I walked all over you. But you know, Linda, I'm mad at everybody. Okay, because these people, they make a lot of money. They're the rich ruling elite on both sides, and I'm just tired of the rhetoric. And I think the American people are tired of the rhetoric. This is extremely damaging to our country. It invades our safety and our security, and we don't know who these people are. And we have drug traffickers and sex traffickers and MS-13 gang members and terrorists coming into this country. And none of these people are being vetted.
Well, we've talked about all of those things many, many times, and so none of them are changing. The thing that's very frustrating to me is there is one person that's trying to do anything about this problem, and that is President Trump. And really, he's going it alone. He had to declare an emergency because our Congress and Senate would do nothing to fix this immigration issue or fix our security issues. And then he did declare an emergency, and then they voted against him. And this includes Republicans. It took Republicans also to contribute to trying to overturn his decision, but they could not overturn his veto. So thank goodness for that, and thank goodness that he is now getting money to build the wall. And speaking of building the wall, in Texas, our governor, Governor Abbott, is not waiting for federal money. They are using their money to get the wall built in Texas themselves because they understand probably better than most states in the country what this illegal immigration coming over the border does. There is that corridor in Texas that is used for transporting children who are victims of sex trafficking all up and down the United States. So they hit that corridor, and then it gives them entry anywhere that they want to go.
And I think that's the San Antonio corridor, isn't it, Linda?
Well, it is, yes.
Right.
And goes right through San Antonio.
We're right in that corridor. So, you know, people like us and that live, you know, in places like the Hill Country or over in Dallas or through Houston or through El Paso, all of the Texans feel this, and it's absolutely horrible. But, you know, I want to talk about what it means to close the border. So I think what we're referring to is that we're going to close, President Trump wants to close all the border entry points, and I think that means to regular people. I don't know if it also means to commercial vehicles that are carrying goods back and forth between the United States and Mexico.
But I think it does.
Does it really?
Well, I don't know.
And I think maybe then that's what needs to be done. I know we would have to suffer a little bit in the United States, but you know, Mexico and the Central American countries that are greatly contributing to this problem, we have to do something to wake them up. And so far, Mexico, which is extremely disappointing, hasn't done anything. I understand the Central American countries like Guatemala, San Salvador, El Salvador, Panama, Nicaragua, I mean, Honduras, those are the major people that are coming in. Colombia are the major people coming up through Mexico and into the United States. But, you know, we have to wake up our southern border neighbor, which is the Republic of Mexico.
Well, one of the Democratic presidential candidates, one of the many, was saying how President Trump should not close the border because we do something like $1.6 billion, I think he said, they said, a day with Mexico. Well, then where were you all these years that we needed to fix this? Did they not do this then? I mean, it's ludicrous for them to complain about the one person doing anything when they have done nothing for all this time. And I am all for closing the border. I am all for causing a lot of people a lot of pain until this problem gets fixed. The one thing that you do not hear from our legislators is, let's sit down and fix this problem. We do not hear that conversation. We hear a lot of criticism about our president. We hear a lot of pandering to the people coming over the border. We hear a lot of that we don't have a problem. But what we don't hear is, let's sit down and fix this for the American people. And I'm just disgusted with that. I think every American should be.
Well, Linda, I'm telling you, you and I have been to Washington, D.C. on numerous occasions for work, and we understand the Beltway mentality. And all it is a bunch of rhetoric and people collecting big paychecks and big benefits. And we're talking about the Senate and the Congress. And nobody wants to solve this problem. And these problems are not that difficult to solve. And they don't want to solve the problem because the Republicans and the Democrats both get something out of illegal aliens crossing the border, I'm sorry to say.
Well, what we seem to be getting, Ron, is a whole lot of people on our welfare systems and our school systems and a whole lot of people abusing our tax systems. That's what we're getting. We're not getting the best of the best. We're not getting the highly educated, highly qualified, skilled workers. We are getting people that really have nothing almost to lose and are coming to America and jumping on all of our ways that we help them. And this hurts all of us. We just need to get this solved. And I totally agree with you. And we've talked about this many times. This is not a hard problem to solve. If you would get 10 or 15 people in a room that have some brains and some ways to solve problems, and that would be almost any business owner in this country, because we as business owners have to solve problems day in and day out.
Well,
this is solvable.
Well, of course, it's solvable, and we need more than, you know, just, 10 or 15 people. We need the leadership from both the Democrats and the Republicans to get together on this, because this, you know, the United States will not be sustained as a major world power when we are infused by people from third world countries with no education and no job skills and no hope for the future. They can't all work in the fields. They can't all work in menial labor jobs. We have to have people in the United States that are involved in the trades, in the professions, in manufacturing, in inventing things, in all sorts of areas, medicine, science, the space, every place. We need intelligent, well-skilled people that speak the English language fluently, and we're not getting that. What America is becoming slowly but surely is a second world nation. And the Democrats allow that to continue because they care less about this country, and all they care about is power and hating Trump. That's all they care about. The Republicans, like the John McCains and even the Rand Pauls and some of those people, have turned their back on the American citizen and other Republicans and common sense conservatives, and they're just letting the Democrats run away with this. This is absolutely disgusting and disappointing.
Well, I want to give you a picture of two governors, Ron. So we have the governor in California, Gavin Newsom, who came out and said, well, the border problem is a federal problem. It's not our problem. This is for them to solve, not us. Yet, California and Gavin Newsom have made every city, actually, they've made a sanctuary state. So every city is a sanctuary city. In California, basically, they completely give them money and they let them live in home, you know, as homeless people without any problems. They cannot be picked up by ICE. The police are not allowed to cooperate. They've done everything they can to lay out the red carpet for illegals coming over the border in California. And then he calls it a federal problem. You are attracting these people like flies to the state, and then you have the audacity to call it a federal problem. Then you have the governor in Texas, Governor Abbott, who sees what the problem is, and they get out and they get their wallets out and they start building a wall and they start doing the things that they need to do to add Border Patrol, to add technology, to add barriers, and do everything that they can to stop the problems that are coming over the border. And, you know, they've done as much as they can do in that state with the resources that they have in trying to maintain, you know, some sort of a semblance of order. But it's very difficult because we have so many people coming over the border, there's just nowhere to house them.
Well, you know, to compare and contrast California, where we used to live, and now Texas, is it's a stark contrast. Because, you know, when Gavin Newsom, you know, gets up on that podium and says this is a federal problem, everybody's just laughing because nobody believes that. Illegal aliens in the state of California cost the California government, cost taxpayers, $33 billion a year. So when you take a look at the road system, which is a total shambles, when you take a look at the prison system, which is a total shambles, when you take a look, even more importantly, at the mental health system in California, which is a shambles and is non-existent, all of those problems could be solved with an infusion of $33 billion a year. Okay, so it obviously hurts people in California. When you take a look at not only the federal prison population in California, but the state correctional prison population in California, over 40% of all the convicted felons that are in state and federal prisons are illegal aliens. So you look at about 25 million to 26 million now illegal aliens in the United States. They comprise something around 8% of the population throughout the United States, but they commit, and I've written about this and spoken about this on a number of occasions, they commit by far a more inordinate amount of crime than legal citizens in the United States. And so everybody is hurting. Now, you mentioned Governor Abbott, and I think we're going to talk about Governor Abbott real soon tonight. But what a wonderful governor. It makes us proud to be Texans, and compare and contrast the way that Governor Abbott is fully engaged with Texans as compared to Governor Newsom, who just tells California citizens, look, this is the way I'm going to do it. Okay. And then he goes ahead and does it. They raise taxes. Now they're talking about another estate tax. They've raised the gas tax. They are just out of control in the state of California. I feel so bad for our relatives and our friends that are still stuck there.
Well, that they're making a choice, and they've got to look at that choice and see what the benefits are for them to perhaps leave. And I know so many people that are leaving, but you know, California needs to take a lesson from New York. They can just ask Cuomo over there,
what's going on?
Yeah, right. how's that working for you, raising all those taxes? But you know, let's do talk about Governor Abbott, because we were privileged to be on a phone call with him a couple of days ago and spend an hour listening to our governor really listen to us. And that is so unprecedented in my lifetime, to have a governor that is that interested in what his people in his state want and what their issues are. And I mean, truly listen and truly come up with solutions. That's just something that I've never experienced.
Well, I think technology, Linda, has a lot to do with this. Not only does Governor Abbott have physical town hall meetings, but the thing that I really like, which allows us as very busy people to remain engaged with Texas politics, is that they do the telephone town hall meetings. And we just participated in one of those telephone town hall meetings just a couple of days ago. And it was just fantastic, because not only do you hear the governor talking about policies and some of the things that he intends to do for Texicans, but you get to hear our neighbors talk directly to the governor and discuss their concerns and ask him questions. Isn't that just amazing?
That is amazing. And like I say, it's something that I've never experienced. And the thing is that the answers were thoughtful, and he already had his finger on any problems that people brought up. So it wasn't like an answer that said, well, you know, we'll look into that. It was a thorough answer of, here's what we're doing about that already, which tells me that this governor really has his finger on the pulse of the people in his state. And I don't know how other states do it, but boy, they should really take a lesson here, because this is a wonderful way to treat the people of your state. He really recognizes that we are not his servant. He is the servant to the people, and he lives it and believes it, and he acts on it. And I love that.
You know, that's exactly what I really liked about him. And you brought up a couple of things, and I'm just going to repeat it. Number one, I was satisfied with every single answer to the questions that Texans presented him with. And he was on top of every single one of them. Hey, Lynn, let's grab our first cup of coffee of the evening.
I'm ready.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. Well, I got a nice steaming cup of coffee, and I see you've got yours as well. So let's continue with our discussion about Governor Abbott. And I think one of the things that I found very interesting, and it was actually one of the last questions that was asked, and I was hoping somebody was going to ask it, is what did he intend to do about the issue of the City Council of San Antonio, nearby where we live, not allowing Chick-fil-A to open up a restaurant at the San Antonio International Airport?
Well, he he said that they immediately filed a lawsuit. And also, in addition to the Attorney General getting involved in Texas, the First Liberty Institute asked the United States Secretary of Transportation, Elaine Chao, you know who she is?
Of course I do.
Yeah, to investigate the Texas City Council for religious discrimination. So this is not going away, and you just can't get away with this.
Well, you know, one of the things that struck me right away, and you know, God bless Governor Abbott and Paxton, our Attorney General, for deciding that they were going to take on the City Council in San Antonio. But what struck me right away, and you and I know this because we fly so much all over the place, we're in airports every single week. So they take federal money. Okay, these airports are all subsidized by federal money. Well, if you're taking federal money, you have to abide by the discrimination clauses that the federal government has. And you cannot discriminate against Chick-fil-A because you don't like that they donate to causes that might be contrary to what the LGBTQ community is all about. It's not that Chick-fil-A and their administration discriminate against people of different sexual orientations. They do not. Everybody is welcome in Chick-fil-A. Nobody is refused service. They welcome all of these different diverse communities into Chick-fil-A's, and it's part of their mission statement, which anybody can read if you go on the Chick-fil-A website. They have a no tolerance against discrimination policy. And so you cannot kick them out of the San Antonio airport if they are not practicing discriminatory policies.
No, this is true. And the city council's allegations stem from a report that attacks their charitable giving. And it's a privately owned restaurant, so they can give to who they want. But like you said, they don't discriminate against anybody. They actually have renowned service and hospitality to everybody that comes into their restaurants. And ironically, it's the city council who are breaking the very principle of non-discrimination that they say that they're talking about here, because they are the ones discriminating against Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A discriminates against no one.
Well, Linda, let me ask you a question. Would not a correct analogy be that the city council would start discriminating against Christian churches who don't abide by homosexuality and some things that the LGBT community are all about? So what? Are we going to get rid of churches next because they have a a religious disagreement with regards to sexual orientation and that class of people?
Well, I would imagine that that's the direction that it's going, Ron. It seems to be the direction that the country's going. The intolerance of these people who claim to be tolerant. So in other words, they're accusing Chick-fil-A of being intolerant of one community where, in fact, they are the ones that are intolerant. And this is in so many different ways. We can see this in our country. So what's happening now, which I really like, is our governor has taken a stand against this. And he's saying, no, this is not going to happen. And, you know, lately there's been a number of different cities that have been banning Chick-fil-A. So there was more than just San Antonio. It was also the Buffalo Niagara International Airport in New York and some other ones that have just come up. And I just think that this is a horrible trend because really they are discriminating against Chick-fil-A for being a Christian organization, is if you want to get right down to it. This is not a good thing. So, and what was really cute was on the conversation with Governor Abbott, What was he doing while we were talking with him?
He was eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
He was. He was enjoying his Chick-fil-A.
And talking up Chick-fil-A at the same time. You know what? On a personal note for you and I, you know, because we're in and out of that San Antonio airport all the time, I'm going to be there at 4 o'clock tomorrow morning. And I'm telling you what, there are few places to eat at the San Antonio airport. Now they've got a couple of places there, truth be told, that are fairly decent places, and you and I are there, but they've only got a few. There's just a
And the
handful of them.
lines are so long
Of
because they
course.
only have a few. So we need a Chick-fil-A. I'm all for it. And by the way, it is the best chicken sandwich and the most profitable fast food chain in the country.
You know, I'm glad you say that because they did a projection because, Chick-fil-A had put together a proposal to come to the airport. And, the interesting thing was it was initially accepted, but then Councilman, I think his name is Robert Trevino, he, started a movement to vote against it. And then all of a sudden they voted it down. But the projection from Chick-fil-A as far as tax money going into the coffers for the city of San Antonio was $2 million. So you get a lot of people that love to eat Chick-fil-A. I absolutely agree with you. They got the best chicken sandwich out there, bar none. And a few other things that are really good. Plus, the customer service is outstanding. The food tastes great, and everything is very clean in their restaurants. They hire a diverse workforce there of all different types of people, races, cultures, sexual orientations. And look at all the people who are the travelers that, like you and me, that are just looking for something to eat. And we're going to be prevented from enjoying Chick-fil-A at the airport.
Well, and what does this sound like? What does this statement sound like to you? What happens when a government threatens businesses owned by religious people because they or the organizations that they donate to may not hold the opinions that the government prefers? What does that sound like to you?
Oh no, you're exactly right. The thing that gets me again, it's the rich elite politicians that are supposed to represent all of us, and they're not representing
But Ron,
all of
doesn't
us.
that sound like communism?
Well, it's more towards socialism and Marxism. Yes, you're absolutely right. But we see this time and time again. And this is part of what, in a larger scope, Linda, this goes back to our conversation and the article that I wrote that it's time to start a new civil war in the United States. Underscore the word civil, meaning nonviolent. People in the United States have got to wake up, and they have to understand that there is a ultra left, new progressive socialist slash Marxist movement in this country with the rich ruling elite, the relatively few, and they are seeking to control the masses of people in the United States, and they just are running roughshod over all of us, and they are taking away our due process.
Well, I think you're right. And that kind of brings me to another subject, Ron. And I do want to also talk about the Mueller report, but it brings me to the Jesse Smollett decision by the prosecutors in Chicago, which is absolutely a slap in the face to the police department in Chicago. It's a slap in the face to just to so many people, to people that are Trump loving fans that were really discriminated against in his allegations. It's just a slap in the face to law enforcement and to truth and just to so many different things. And now for him to get off because it seems like there's some relationship between Michelle Obama's ex-assistant and the prosecutor who, had some decision that they made to let this guy off. Well, and it's insulting.
Well, you know, Linda, as you recall, you know, myself and one of our forensic experts, actually our forensic interviewer and polygraph examiner, Dan Sosnowski, and I had a complete program on a thread of evidence on America Out Loud, and we talked all about the Smollett case. But since that time, some other things have been revealed, and that's what you're referring to. So Prosecutor Fox had gotten donations from the man behind the curtain, George Soros, who paid her campaign over $400,000. And so in comes Michelle Obama's former chief of staff, making some text messages to Prosecutor Fox and a couple of telephone calls. And if you remember that initially Fox said she was going to recuse herself, then all of a sudden she jumps back into the fray and she says, well, you know, the use of the term recuse was actually a colloquial term.
Oh, really?
I mean, can you explain it to me? Okay, there's a big college word for you. Okay, it was just a colloquial representation. I never really recused myself at all.
Well, so, plus she's supposed to, when she recuses herself, it's supposed to recuse her entire office.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. That's exactly right. She doesn't just, you know, represent herself. She represents the entire prosecutor's office. So they should have allowed the state attorney general's office to go in there and investigate that. But actually, because there were allegations of wire fraud and mail fraud, because remember, Smollett actually wrote a letter to himself and used the U.S. mail, okay, to send that letter. That brings in federal jurisdiction. He was text messaging and calling the two Nigerian brothers who he paid $3,500 to beat him up and to put bleach on him and, you know, buy the rope that he put around, you know, the noose that he put around his neck, another federal crime. That means that the FBI needed to be called into that investigation. So I don't care if Ms. Fox wants to recuse herself in her agency, but it needed to be replaced by a federal agency. And so all of a sudden, she, without any warning, by the way, to the chief of police and to the mayor's office or to anybody else, she just drops all the charges and says, well, he gave up his bail, which was $10,000, and also served 16 hours of prior community service time with guess who? Jesse Jackson. That was enough pain for him to have endured, and we're just going to let him go. Absolutely amazing. And to me personally, it speaks of high corruption.
Well, and look how they twist this around. The Democrats are slamming President Trump for calling for a Smollett investigation, and they accuse Trump of being silent on the rise of white nationalism. So this guy made claims against white people that were totally false, against Trump supporters that were totally false. And when an investigation is called for, you are accused of being a white nationalist. I mean, this is just so hypocritical. People need to see how these stories are being twisted and turned and made to have a narrative that is untrue. And by the way, apparently Chris Rock really kind of got a dig into Jussie Smollett on the NAACP Awards, which, by the way, Smollett did not win, so he avoided the party. But, you know, Chris Rock was, you know, he's hilarious as a comedian. He's what the hell was he thinking?
Well, can I step in here for just a second, yeah, sweetheart? Because, you know, some people are trying to minimize this. And I have to tell you, to me, it's a big deal. Okay, so what they're saying, well, you know, it's just a false report and we have bigger fish to fry. Wait a minute. Look at the nature of the false report. This was a false report of a hate crime. Okay, a false report that white people who were Trump supporters beat this guy up and threw bleach on him and were yelling, you know, MAGA slogans and racial, you know, epithets at Jussie Smollett. And when you take a look at how divisive the country has become and how divided we are when we need to be the United States, not the divided states of America, this just tears the fabric of our country. And so to me, it's a big deal. And if there is any relationship and corruption from Michelle Obama or the former President Obama or George Soros, if there is major corruption with the prosecutor's office, this needs to be addressed. And you're damn right it needs to be investigated. And I'm glad that President Trump has threatened to bring in the United States Department of Justice and the FBI and properly investigate this. This is something that we need to get to the bottom of. We need to get some transparency here and some accountability.
Well, we do. And, you know, the sad truth is, Ron, that if this was reversed and if Jussie Smollett was white and if he accused black people of doing this and throwing some sort of a chemical substance on them and doing all the things that Jussie Smollett accused white people of doing, there would be marches and possible riots and all of that. And certainly that person would not be getting off like this. We need to have justice be the same for everyone, whether you're an actor, whether you are a teacher, whether you are an immigrant, whatever you are, the justice needs to be the same. And this was wholly, wholly wrong.
Well, you know, another thing that bothers me, you know, you're talking about justice and two-sided justice. Again, and just take away the color for a minute, okay, the fact that Smollett is black. But let's go back again to the theme of the rich, elitist people getting a different style of justice than the average hardworking American or poor person. Okay, completely different style of justice. And we cannot have our criminal justice system corrupted like this. There has to be one style and system of justice for all of us, no matter what color you are, no matter what side of the tracks you live on, no matter what your race, your culture, your sexual orientation, how much money you make or don't make. I mean, we've got to have one system of justice.
Well, and hopefully we'll get there. Seems to me like we're going in the opposite direction. And, just it really has nothing to do with justice, but it reminds me, your conversation reminds me right now that AOC, Ocasio-Cortez, has now spoken out thinking that Congress people should get a raise. She's just barely in office. She already made herself, what was it, $10 million?
Yeah, with that deal that she had with Netflix. But you know what, Linda? Let's carry this on in just a minute because I'm hankering for another cup of coffee.
Okay.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, okay, got my final cup of coffee. And listen, I wanted to continue with our conversation about AOC. And you're exactly right. So here's the bartender lady that gets hired, gets voted into Congress, all right? And already she's moaning and complaining that she's not making enough money. My God, I think they start out at $137,000 a year, free mail, free benefits, free medical. She gets drivers. She gets an entourage. She gets all sorts of freebies, free airfare. I mean, you name it. Everything is free. But also, did she forget to mention that after serving only one day in Congress, she gets retirement for life?
I think she forgot to mention that.
Okay, and now she's become the rich elite because, like I said before we went to have coffee, she inked a deal on the story of her life, as brief as it is, with Netflix for $10 million. So look at that paycheck that's coming in. And she has the audacity to whine and complain about they're not making enough money. Show me what kind of work you're doing to earn $137,000 a year. And they don't even work every day.
Well, you know, speaking of what work she's doing, besides already having some trouble as far as her campaign finance violations, and she's in a couple different hot waters on things. You know, the other thing is that they just had a vote in the Senate on her
new Green Deal
manifesto, I prefer to call it.
And how did that work out?
Well, that didn't work out so well because the Republicans all voted no, and the Democrats all voted present.
Present, like Obama used to vote, remember?
Yes.
When he was a state senator, he used to vote present all the time. Well, guess what? Nobody is drinking that Kool-Aid.
But nobody had the spine to say what they feel about it. So voting present is nothing. That's just nothing. That's sitting on the middle of the fence and not being one way or the other. And sitting on the fence is really a coward's way out.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, so that's it for OAC. And how about that?
AOC.
Well, you know me. I can't get it right. Anyway. Oh, by the way, let me just lay down, one last straw before we move on and talk about Mueller. But did you see that the people in her district are already complaining because she's not spending any time in her district and not taking care of business in the District of Queens, New York? What do you think about that?
I'm
telling you, young lady, okay, you heard it from me first, a one-hit wonder, okay? One-hit wonder. I do not believe that she'll be voted back into Congress next time around.
Well, I don't know. If she's the only Democrat voting and it's New York, they'll probably vote for any Democrat over any Republican.
Linda, I'm going to tell you what. Look at this dollar. And I'm going to take it and put it in the cookie jar and let's hold it there until 2020 and find out if she gets elected.
I just have one question about that.
Go ahead.
Do we have a cookie jar?
Linda. Well, it's actually a coffee can.
Okay.
So what do you think about the whole results of the Mueller investigation?
Well, imagine our surprise. Do I sound surprised?
Not me.
Yeah, I didn't think that this was going to go anywhere, but I also did not, in all honesty, trust Mueller at all. So I did feel like it was a witch hunt. I did feel like he was doing everything he could to make it be so, but he couldn't. And so the results had to come out as that there is no collusion.
Well, I know Bill Barr, our new attorney general, has written the four-page letter basically saying no collusion whatsoever, no association between President Trump and his campaign and the Russians. And by the way, I mean, he didn't say this in his letter, but I think most of us common sense conservatives that really follow the news understand that the real collusion was between Hillary Clinton, her campaign, her husband, and the Russians.
Okay, I mean, that's interesting. I agree with you, but nobody says that out loud.
Well, nobody talks about, Uranium One. I think if you asked people on the street, what is Uranium One? I'll bet you 90% of the people wouldn't even know what Uranium One was. But you and I know that under her administration in the State Department, she basically worked out a deal with the Russians to take 20% of the United States' uranium supply and move it to Russia. My God, that's all fissionable materials. Okay, so how does that happen? And then all of a sudden, how does Bill Clinton and Hillary in their foundation get millions and millions of dollars that come from Russian oligarchs? And then how does President Clinton get five times the speaker rate for giving a one-hour speech in Russia? How does that happen?
Just the whole way that this started with this dossier, I mean, the collusion was completely on the other side. And it's just really sad that they only chose, they didn't do an investigation that was a thorough investigation. They did a very one-sided investigation, with the point being to find out about President Trump. They didn't do an investigation to find out how this whole thing really happened. And now President Trump and also some of the senators are talking about getting that particular part of the investigation done. I would like to see it done. I think it needs to be done. I think people need to be brought to justice. But I also think the American people are tired of this.
Well, you know, there's been several polls, and they've been very, very good polls. And I'm not talking about conservative polls. There was a poll in USA Today. There was a poll, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal. There was a poll in the Washington Post, which, of course, is very anti-Trump. There was a CNN poll, for God's sakes. And so thousands of people have been polled, and hardly any of them, and matter of fact, in the CNN poll, not a single one out of, I think, over 1,500 people that they spoke with said that they want to continue with the collusion scenario with President Trump. Not a single one, okay? Not one. And that's absolutely amazing. By the way, and now this comes, you know, full reporting, but this comes from Fox News. They reported just yesterday that CNN lost over 55% of their viewership after the collusion story broke. So
well, I know
what,
that
that's what's been holding up. I'll tell you what, that's what's been holding up that network, that collusion thing, and they lost 55% of their viewership. Now, we'll see if that comes back, but so far, man, I'm glad I don't have any stock in CNN.
Well, I know Rachel Maddow lost, her ratings really went down. So, but, you know, couldn't happen to a better or worse reporter because she was so biased and so untruthful in her reporting. You know, eventually in life, Ron, what goes around comes around. You know, there's still probably more to be said about the Mueller investigation because we're going to get a redacted report from Mr. Barr there. So we'll see what else it says. But the big deal is no collusion. Let's move on with life. And speaking of moving on, you know, I want to talk about something that I just absolutely love. The Senate has confirmed President Trump's nominee to be a judge on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, 53-46, and that's Eric Miller. By the time that Trump is done with this Ninth Circuit, which is legendarily left, right?
The most overturned.
Legendarily left, right?
It's the most overturned Court of Appeals in the United States out of the different courts of appeals.
Well, I have to tell you what's so funny about this is there has been forever, I guess, for the last 100 years, there's been this thing that happens when you have court nominees in somebody's district. It's called a blue slip. And the blue slip is that the president would go to the people in California in that Ninth Circuit Court district and talk to their senators, which in this case would be Dianne Feinstein or Kamala Harris, right?
That's correct.
And President Trump didn't do that. He went completely around them and did what he wanted to do. And they are completely miffed about this because they said for 100 years, you know, they come to us and discuss it and we come to some agreement. Now, let's talk about, again, hypocrisy. Are you kidding me that President Trump would go to Dianne Feinstein and Kamala Harris and ask for their permission and their opinion about the conservative judges he wants to put on the Ninth Circuit?
After what they did to Brent Kavanaugh? I'm sorry I interrupted you, but it's a good point. After what they did to Brent Kavanaugh, what do you think?
Sure. Of course. And so Feinstein is just, insulted that he's disregarding the Democratic blue slips, and that she says the Democratic senators have made good faith efforts to find consensus picks for the circuit court. Hello, this is no longer a consensus. Get
Well,
it clear that President Trump is doing the agenda of the people that elected him, and thank goodness for that.
the Ninth Circuit's been a total embarrassment, and if you remember, okay, pat on my back, I actually had my first case at the United States Supreme Court as a forensic expert in White versus Pauley out of the state of New Mexico. And that was a very positive ruling by the very liberal Ninth Circuit, which surprised the heck out of us. But I am really happy about President Trump moving forward and taking the bull by the horns and appointing these federal judges that need to be appointed all over the United States. And you know what, Linda? Maybe it's a little bit too early for me to say this, but I'll tell you what. So far, I think President Trump looks pretty darn good to be reelected in 2020. And I think that if he just sticks to his guns and keeps moving America forward, and we keep seeing this ridiculous far left new progressive socialist movement on the Democratic Party where they don't want to move anything ahead, they just want to keep hating Trump. I think it puts Republicans in a much better position to win in 2020, not only with the President of the United States, but with congresspeople and senators that'll be up for reelection as well.
Well, and let's talk about that for a second, because one of the things that Governor Abbott mentioned was that, as far as, say, in Texas, the election was way too close. And what we need is we need people like you and I and people that are like-minded to get out there and help and to make sure that our elections are not this close again, because as Texas goes, so goes America. So we really need to be thinking about that, and we need to be working towards, having this movement, as you call it, a civil war, and getting people who are like-minded, who are working, who are busy, to actually get involved. And that's what we need to do. And we just run, America Out Loud just celebrated its 3rd year in being in existence, and we had a huge celebration on the radio station with all of the different talk show hosts and writers, and it was quite fascinating as to how much the station has grown and how much they're really leading in this fight to keep America America and to keep President Trump in office and to understand the things that are happening in our country, where a lot of people have just tuned out and they're not listening and they don't understand all of these things that are happening and how the media is, kind of guiding people by the nose instead of telling the truth. And it's really becoming a really positive force in America, and we need to have that movement continue and to get more people on board and understand and get involved and not let this country, turn into a socialist Venezuela.
Well, there's two networks that I really enjoy listening to and participating in. And number one is America Out Loud, which, as you've stated, is really the voice of common sense conservatives. I don't think there's any place, any other network on radio that has the diverse, intelligent, articulate, experienced staff of experts, whether they're talk show hosts or whether they're columnists, than America Out Loud. It absolutely speaks to the people in the United States from all walks of life, and especially common sense conservatives and people from flyover states. And then, of course, my second favorite network is One America News, that I'm so proud that I am their crime expert, because that is another network on cable television that is experiencing phenomenal growth. I see more and more people gravitating towards One America News, and I see continued amazing growth on America Out Loud. And I'm just so pleased that you and I have this amazing opportunity not only to talk to common sense Americans like we're doing right now with Talking While Married, and also doing the column work. Now, Linda, you do a lot more columns than I do, but your columns are just wonderful. They're just so diverse, so I'm giving you a little pat on the back.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure working with America Out Loud, and I have to tell you about a small victory just today, in that I went and got my nails done today, as you know. And
they look so pretty.
And I've been going to this same place for a very long time, and they have two TVs in there, and on the TVs are always mostly cooking shows. But
I know, I go with you sometimes, yeah. And I love to sit there while you're getting your nails done and watch the cooking shows.
I always tell Joe over there, hey, you know, let's get some good news on here, like One America News, which he'd never heard of. When I went in today, before I got there, guess what was playing on that TV?
Oh, my God. And One America News?
One America News. And I said to him, I said, that is the best conservative news station that you could put on there. He says, I know. I really, really like it. I watch it every day now. So I'm like patting myself on the back today saying, you know, I made a difference for somebody, and that's really cool. And that's what we all need to be doing, one person at a time.
Right. And that's
we don't have to lecture them.
Yeah.
We just have to open their eyes, because everything that they need to see is right in front of them.
And you know, that's all part and parcel, as you and I are talking about the new civil war that has to occur in the United States, underscoring again the civil part of the civil war. People have got to become engaged. I know sometimes it's so disappointing, and it can be depressing at times when you don't have a voice. But as I've said many, many times, look, people, you know, you don't lose your civil rights. People take them away from you, and you need to fight to keep your civil rights. As a person, as a professional, no matter what you're doing, as a parent, you lose your civil rights when they educate your kids and they indoctrinate them with the socialist values, okay? You lose your civil rights when they take your Chick-fil-A away from you, okay? You lose your civil rights when you allow the liberal, rich elite to rule you, and you have no voice and no due process.
And if you allow that to happen, and that's a big word, because you don't have to allow it to happen, you can do something, you can say something, you can get on the offensive, but you cannot lie down and take it. So they will do as much as they can do as we let them.
And that's exactly right.
Yes.
So Linda, let's just do this. Before we say goodnight, let's just agree to fight the good fight.
We will be out loud about it.
Well, that's great. All right, honey, time for bed.
Okay, let's grab that doggy.
Okay, here we go.